Okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and get started. Do I have my first panel members up here? All of you are here? Okay. Well, our topic of our membership committee seminar this year is how to use your convention as a membership tool. And so we have two superb panels, and I hope you all learn something, and keep your questions until the end of the panel, and then we'll have a chance to have you ask questions and hopefully get answers. Our first panel is going to be best practices for a convention. And in that one, our panel members, and this doesn't necessarily in the order that they'll be speaking, you know, they can speak in a different order, but I'll tell you who they are. Peggy Garrett is from ACB of Texas, and she's from Missouri City, Texas. Then we have Alan Peterson, and he's from the North Dakota Association of the Blind, and he is from Horace, North Dakota. Then we have Donna Seliger from the Iowa Council of the United Blind, and she's from Des Moines, Iowa. Okay. We'll go ahead and start with that panel first. And who would like to be first? Donna, you want to be first? Okay. And I gave them a list of questions ahead of time that they could answer if those were ones that they felt comfortable answering. So if they skip one on me, I'll nudge them a little bit. Okay, there's a. Do you want to use the? You want to use this mic, or do you want to go up podium?
Oh, I can sit here.
Oh,
but I don't. I forgot to bring the questions.
Oh, okay. I can nudge you.
Okay.
Let me pull up the mic. She wants to be interviewed, so I'll interview her. Oh, I'm sorry. I just assume everybody knows. I'm Artis Bazin. I'm the ACB membership chairperson, and I'm from Burbank, California. And how many people do we have? If we don't have a lot, we can probably do a quick introduction. Would you like to do that? Okay, well, maybe we'll just go ahead because we have a lot of material to cover. So when you do ask questions later, you can give us your name and tell us where you're from so we know who is who is asking the questions. Okay, let me pull up the questions here.
Did you hear about the blonde who was driving down the road and the policeman stopped her? And he said, I'd like to see your license and your identification. You were speeding. And she said, yesterday you took my license away and today you want to see it.
Okay, I found the questions. Okay, the first question was, how do you get the best hotel accommodations for your convention?
What I do is I contact several hotels in the area, and then I set up a chart on my computer, and I compare room rates, what other pricings like meals, meeting rooms, microphones, anything that needs to be connected to the convention. And after I've done that, then I go to the president and tell that person, you know, what I've come up with and what I would recommend.
Okay, I've got a quick follow-up for that. Does the board make the decisions for that, or do you and the president?
The board makes the decision.
Okay.
The president goes to the board for a final decision.
Oh, that's a good idea. Peggy had a wonderful thought. Answer each question first and then go to the next one. That's a good idea. Go ahead, Peggy.
And like Donna, I too will contact hotels, but in addition to that, I also utilize the Convention and Visitors Bureau. They have a lot more contacts than what I started out doing was going online, putting in the city and hotels, and you get so many hotels in some cities, and a lot of them you know are not going to be what we're looking for. They're not going to be able to accommodate our price or maybe our size. So what I've started doing is utilizing the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and they will send out the request for proposals for you. And then the information comes directly back to me. I then go through the ones that have sent in proposals saying that, yes, they can accommodate us. A lot of times they will say, well, no, we can't meet your price, or we can't accommodate a group your size. And that saves me a lot of time from having to make the individual contacts. I also utilize if there are organizations, say maybe a chapter in that city, or even maybe a center for independent living, or whomever works with people with disabilities. I will contact them also and ask what hotels in that area that they have used and have been able to accommodate them.
Okay, Alan.
Yes. In North Dakota, we have pretty much 8 distinct regions of the state, and we have held our convention in each of the regions, and we rely on people in that city. There's a city, major city in each of those regions, and someone from those cities we rely on to check out the hotels to find out which hotel will give us the best price. And next year we'll have it in Williston. Fortunately or unfortunately, that's been a very growth area in our state, and we've had trouble. We didn't think we could go back to Williston, but because the oil business has taken a downturn, we can I guess go back to Williston, but we do rely on the people in the region to negotiate a contract, and then the contract is brought back to the board for a final decision.
Now, do you try to negotiate?
They make a recommendation. We make a recommendation to the board, and the board makes a final decision.
Do you try to negotiate special fees for like luncheons or banquets, et cetera?
Yes, we do, and we try to get sponsorships like we do here at the National Convention as well. A Lions Club or a business, a vendor is a good contact to negotiate a coffee or a lunch.
Okay, the next question was, how do we arrange for the best guide dogs area? Oh, you had one more comment? Okay.
I'll let us answer that.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Like Alan, we too try to get sponsors. And what I try to negotiate each year is to get a package for, we have 3 main meals. We have a luncheon and a banquet and a breakfast. And I try to get a package price for all 3 meals to keep it as low as possible. We've been successful in getting some sponsors that we've been able to keep our registration fee pretty low. And the registration fee includes those three meals. And so that's pretty much what we've been doing. Now, to kind of go back just a little bit, we don't have chapters in all of the cities where we hold our conferences. And right now, some of the cities where we do hold our conferences don't always act as the host for the conference. So we have a committee. We have a conference convention committee. And once I've gone out and actually gotten the proposals, I bring them back to the committee, and then we make a recommendation to the board, and the board makes the final decision.
Pardon me. We have very few guide dogs in Iowa, and what I have done is talk to the catering manager and the hotel manager about a guide dog relief area. And they generally say, you know, have the person come to the front desk, and we will show them where they can have their dog relieve themselves, because we may have one or two dogs at our convention. So it's not a big problem.
For the guide dog relief area.
Yeah, that is really important, because I've had negotiations with hotels that tried to put our guide dog area, relief area, on the opposite side of the street, which is not good. So that is something that you do have to negotiate in some instances. It does help if a hotel has worked with a blindness group before, and they're kind of used to the fact that you need to have that guide dog relief area. If it is a new hotel, it may take some negotiating, and I use it as a teaching moment to help them to understand that guide dogs are important to people who are blind, and their relief is equally important, and you need to have a specific area, okay? You definitely need that area, but we have to keep in mind the safety issue. And that crossing the street is specifically if there's not a light or an audible pedestrian crossing there, that's really important to negotiate and help them to understand that it needs to be in a safe area.
Like Donna, we don't have a lot of guide members that use guide dogs. We at our hotel this past summer, our convention is held 3 weeks in advance of the national convention, but the grassy area by the hotel was across the street and near the railroad tracks, so that wasn't a good fit. But it did work out. But we do have a lot of open space otherwise in North Dakota. So anyway. Anyway, we do work it out with the hotel in advance. That's
okay. The next question was, how do you find good and varied programming for your conference?
Do you want me to do?
Go ahead.
Okay. A lot of our convention is devoted to the business of our organization. For better or worse, I guess. For better or worse, a lot of our convention is devoted to the business of the organization. This past summer, we had a clinical psychologist provide the education part of our program, which was very well received. We do have a banquet, and we have a banquet speaker. For the past two conventions, we've had people with sight loss that have keynote speaker was our keynote speaker. Yeah, and one was a Iraqi soldier who lost his vision as a consequence of his military service, and the other individual was a businessman that was involved in a horrific crash on our interstate highway. But we rely on people from the area to find the people that can provide us with the program for our convention. So hopefully, you know, it is something that is of value and will attract people from the area, which it usually does, and so that they become involved with our organization and become members.
We try to cover certain areas during our conference, like employment, education, advocacy, and of course some fun things, some entertaining kinds of activities. We usually just kind of brainstorm and come up with sessions that fit within those particular areas, along with leadership training. And then we reach out to the community. We try to include vocational rehabilitation, ADARS, DBS services. We try to include other agencies within the area that we're holding the conference, whether they're independent living centers, the Centers for the Blind, just in anybody that we think can be a draw as far as being good presenters, but at the same time they can have outreach in the community, they can provide volunteers. We try to be as inclusive as we possibly can. We ask our committee as well as our general membership to submit ideas for sessions that they would like to see us include. And we've had things like ballroom dancing. Of course, our leadership is kind of a standard. We have PR, public relations, advocacy. This year, our theme is beach. We're going to be in Corpus Christi. The theme is beach, building, educating, advocating, celebrating in harmony. So we try to cover all of those areas to give, you know, try to have something for everybody. The hardest part is getting the presenters within the areas that we want. This year we've been really good about the outreach and about the response, but sometimes it's not that easy.
We have a committee who plans the program, and each person on the committee is assigned to find a speaker or speakers for the convention, and we have one full day on Saturday of a variety of speakers and entertaining type events. One year we had a guy come and teach us how to line dance. So we do come up with a variety of things.
Okay, and some of you have covered this a little bit already, but what kind of committees do you have your convention? Do you just have one committee, or do you have committees handling different parts of the convention?
We have a program committee, a hospitality committee, and we have, from the program committee, then we have people planning meals and... People planning meals. We have a transportation committee because our members come in from other parts of the state on the bus, or sometimes people come in by plane. And generally, the hotel that we use is away from the downtown area and not on a bus line. So we have arranged to have a person drive a van and pick people up to come to the convention, and then if they do not stay at the hotel, then they're taken home in the evening. And it has worked out very well for us. However, it is an expense that we'd like to do away with if possible. Thank you.
We have one committee. But within that committee, we break it into subcommittees where different people are assigned, have different assignments. One person may be working on hospitality. Somebody else is working on exhibits. Somebody else is working on actually putting together the program, volunteers, just various areas. And within that, we do reach out to other members. We reach out. We don't always get support, but we try to reach out and ask other people who aren't necessarily on the committee to work with us to get things done, because sometimes they know people within their particular area that we may not know that we can pull into, even assist us with things like donations, getting door prizes, getting gifts for the auction, or just supporting us in various ways. So we do have one large committee, but that is broken down into subcommittees.
Yes. Yeah, like Peggy, we have a large committee, usually. I can only speak for Fargo, and the board was involved with the one we did in Jamestown, but we try to break down the responsibilities for the different areas into different people to take different sections of the program, or transportation, or vendors, or I'm involved with the legislator, getting the legislators to our legislative luncheon because I serve as our legislative liaison along with Zelda. So that too is part of our convention. We have a vendor display, vendor showcase, and we invite legislators from the local area to come for a lunch or a breakfast or a picnic to be a part of our convention. And so they get to know about our organization and how they can help us.
Okay, what unique skills does planning a convention take, and how do you get more people to volunteer to help?
We try to extend the network and the network wide and far when we had our convention in Fargo. In the beginning, everybody's enthused, and as it drags on closer to the convention, the people get kind of tired of listening to the same thing over and over again. But anyway, it's a good way. We found that it's a good way to get people involved and feel that they're wanted and needed. And any special skills, I guess, people that have done it before, that's who we want to get involved with to educate the more junior members of a convention planning committee.
I would say experience is a big help, but unique. Try patience and perseverance. One of the hardest things that I encounter as convention coordinator is getting people to respond in a timely manner. You start out in November, December, and everybody's in a holiday mode. So you say, okay, I'll wait till January. You start in January, and they're like, oh, but your conference is not until September. We have plenty of time. Then you call them back in May, and they say, oh, you should have called me in February. It's May. And we've already allocated all of our funds for the second quarter. So it's really timing everything, following through. And I don't know that that's a skill, but it certainly takes a lot of patience. You call and you wait 2 weeks for people to call you back. And I heard your message. I was going to get back to you. But I think that experience, once you've done it a few times, you kind of get a feel for timing for everything, because to me, that's the most important factor, is getting things in a timeline so that you can keep moving forward and don't get stagnant. Don't let people slow you down as far as getting things done. It does take a lot of patience. It does take a lot of perseverance. It does take calling back, and then calling back again sometimes. And even with your committee members sometimes, it's following through and making sure that they're doing what they're doing, what they're supposed to be doing, but not make it seem like you're nitpicking. That to me is a skill, because if they're supposed to do something by the 15th, and by the 16th I don't hear from them, 17th, 18th, I'm going to call them and say, how's that going? Well, it kind of seems like you're nitpicking them, and they say, oh, I'm going to get around to it. So there's a skill between hovering over a person and giving them the time to do what they're supposed to do, and then reminding them that they have to get it done, and that you do have a time frame in which you're working, and you can't wait until the last minute. So I go back to saying patience and perseverance.
Well, I agree with Peggy. I think it takes a lot of perseverance and patience with people, and just, you know, kind of give them a gentle nudge. We've got to get this convention on the road, and we need all the help we can get.
Okay, the last question I have for this panel is, how do you find exhibitors or decide whether you want exhibitors at that particular convention?
I'll try that. Is that better? Okay. We have had a person assigned to find exhibitors, and we've had years when we've had a number of exhibitors, and in other years where it's kind of sparse. But for the most part, we come up with as a committee. We suggest different exhibitors and assign people to contact those exhibitors to see if they're interested in coming to our convention.
We get some of the same exhibitors every year, like Freedom Scientific, HumanWare, some of the bigger ones. But we try to also reach out into the community, and because every community is different. Is that better? Okay, sorry. I think I was holding it to the side instead of directly. But we get some of the same vendors every year, some of the larger groups like the Freedom Scientific, the HumanWare, the HIMSS. We get some of them every year. But we also try to reach into local communities because there are oftentimes what I call mom-and-pop vendors who may not be nationally known. But people come in with things like handbags and jewelry that are handmade. And so we try to get as much of a variety, because not everybody's looking for technology. Some people just want Tupperware or Avon products or whatever. So we try to get a little bit of everything for everybody. Some years, like Donna said, you get 35 or 40. The next year, you may only have 25. I think it depends on where people are financially, and I think it also depends on what else is going on in the community, whether or not they can afford to do, how many different things they can afford to do. We try to keep our vendor prices as low as possible so that we can include as many different options for people. So that's been working so far so good. It works pretty well for us.
We do have vendors at our convention as well. We have a person that has taken that area of responsibility for us, and we don't get a lot of vendors because they kind of consider North Dakota out of the mainstream. I wonder why, but anyway, we don't get a lot of the technology people to come to the far reaches of North Dakota. They're barely quite willing to come to Fargo or Bismarck, which are our two major cities, but we do have about 6 to 10 vendors, I would say.
12 this year.
12, oh, wonderful. Thank you, Zelda. Zelda was our convention coordinator this year, along with another gal. So we don't get a lot of vendors generally. I think that's kind of left to the decision of each individual city that's putting on the convention. But you know, it's a lot of it, like Peggy, we have some mom and pop operations that serve as vendors as well. So
what do you charge for vendors?
Nothing. We're glad they come.
How about Texas? Do you charge?
Yes.
How much do you charge?
Yes, we charge $50 per table. And now we're running into the situation with a lot of the hotels where they want to charge us for electricity. So we haven't had to do that in the past, but now that's becoming an issue. And what we're asking them to keep the price down as low as possible. We only charge the $50 per table, but then if there is a charge for electricity, that goes directly to the hotel.
Boy, that's cheap. California, the chapters can charge $35, but vendors charge are charged $125 to $300 and so. But we do have to pay for the tables and the setup and all that. So, okay, now it's time for you. Do any of you have questions for this panel? Okay, we have a mic, so let's let Allison bring the mic to you so we can hear your question.
All right. Good afternoon. This is Ray Campbell, membership chair for the Illinois Council of the Blind. My question is, for the three of you, do you have someone that in charge of handling reasonable accommodations, such as assistive listening devices, interpreters if needed, those sorts of things?
Actually, we had the listening devices 1 year and didn't have anybody ask for them. So unless we get a request, we don't generally have them available.
Peggy, so it's the same thing with Texas. How about North Dakota? Do you have it in your pre-registration form? Asking them. Okay. Okay. Yeah, it's probably a good thing to have in the pre-registration. Yes, definitely. Okay. Then, any other questions for this panel?
I'm coming.
I have two questions. Number one. In a rural state, such as North Dakota, and Texas is somewhat rural, but North Dakota is more like Iowa, how do you guys deal with transportation? And I mean, it seems like there are fewer buses now, and it's more difficult to get from one city to another, a lot more open space, and a lot of that has impact our membership, as well as being able to come to conventions. What do you do about that? Or is there something, or do you do nothing? And the other question is, how long are your conventions? How many days?
Okay, one of the things that chapters have done around Texas is they have rented vans and got a driver from the chapter or from someone in the community to take groups to the conventions. Usually you can get them at a fairly decent rate. You get a 12, 15 passenger van, you fill it up, depending on the distance and how much it costs to rent it, and gas would determine how much it would cost per passenger. What was the other part of your question? I'm sorry. Oh, our convention starts on Thursday and ends on Sunday. We have our board meeting on Thursday, and then we have tours and different exhibitors and sessions all day on Friday and Saturday, including our luncheon, our dinner, and our banquet and our breakfast. And then our business meeting is on Sunday morning.
Donna, you want to? Helen? It's right over here. It's a podium here.
Okay. Yes. Thanks for the question, because it's a big problem for us in North Dakota. Our largest part of our membership is in Fargo, and I arrange with Alliance to get a bus to take us to wherever the convention is held. But it is a problem for the other cities in our state. I guess they're in some. It's I don't know. Our bus service isn't very good in North Dakota, but usually they find a family member that takes them to the convention, a relative. Our conventions are 3 days. We start with a board meeting on Friday afternoon and end with our business, the main part of our business meeting on Sunday morning, and we're done by noon. So we have in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 to 50. It varies. In Fargo, we can have a larger group. Not so in more the smaller cities.
Okay, Donna.
We have our first convention session on Friday evening, and it's just about an hour, so we can get a few business things out of the way, such as appointing an audit committee. We have an internal audit each year, and the nominating committee. Then we have our all-day session on Saturday with mostly speakers, and Sunday morning then is our business meeting. We don't have a board meeting prior to the convention, and the post-convention board meeting is very short, usually right after the convention, just to decide when to have the fall board meeting. And what was the other part of the question?
Transportation.
Oh, I think I covered that earlier with...
outside of the city.
Well, outside of the city, unfortunately, the buses are almost nil, as you know, and so several years ago it was decided to have our state convention in Des Moines. We keep talking about and trying to move it to another city, but we know that our greatest population is in Des Moines, and we would lose a lot of our members coming to the convention if we moved it to another city, which would be, you know, great for the convention and getting new people, but not great for our Des Moines people.
That's one thing we're fortunate in California. We have more trains and buses because it's a larger population. But we do have, you know, people out in the rural areas, and they have that trouble too and have to find a way in. So I think transportation is a big issue for most of us. Okay, well, we're going to go to our next panel. And the second panel is on building your attendance through outreach and communication. And the panel members for that are Sally Benjamin from the Florida Council of the Blind. And she's from Tallahassee, Florida. We have Dan Sippel from Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America. And he's from Eclair, Wisconsin. We have George Holliday. He's from the Pennsylvania Council of the Blind. And he's from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And finally, we have Brian Charlson. He's with the Library Users of America, and he's from Watertown, Massachusetts. So you gentlemen want to go through your questions on your own, or do you prefer the interview style like the first panel? Okay, we'll do it that way then. Okay. Oh, who are we missing? Oh, Sally. Okay, I know Sally's chair of volunteers, so she probably got rooked into volunteering.
I think we should
take a moment and thank our first panelists. Yeah, just in case they sneak out. Okay, well, we'll go ahead and I'll ask the questions and we'll have answer each question and then we'll go back to the next question. The first question for this panel is, how do you promote your conference?
Good afternoon. This is Brian Charlson with Library Users of America. Our primary means of motivating members to come to our conference, because we're a special interest affiliate, our conference, of course, is here at the National Convention. So we make a point of doing several things. One is we do a general announcement, by way of email to everybody. We keep a very strong email list for that purpose. In addition, on good years, when good boys and girls get things out in time, we'll put an announcement out by way of an article in our newsletter, the Lua Ledger. And I guess the third thing to promote attendance is we make sure that during this conference, we have the number one most attended speaker also come to our part of the meeting, that is the NLS narrator. And that always fills the hall, so to speak, at least once during the course of our programming. You know, not every NLS narrator is as popular as every other narrator. And on those years when we hit the jackpot, the convention committee has yet to give us a room big enough for that time. It's really difficult to tell in advance what the numbers are going to be. But that's how we get them to come in. We also take out an ad in the convention newspaper. You saw our ad for the first 3 days of this year's convention encouraging people to come to our special event, the evaluation of three different handheld scanners. And again, we had enough attendance at our events that the fee to attend covered all of our expenses.
In advertising our convention in PA, we use our newsletter, but also we want to advertise to people who aren't members of PCB. So we contact our associations for the blind sections around the state. There are 27 different PABs there, and we contact them and to encourage them to have them advertising our convention in their newsletter. But you know, we are an advocacy group. And we want to address advocacy at our convention, but that's not always the best way to get people there. We try to do things different, like have fun. Last year, we started a dart tournament amongst the chapters, and that was a drawing card to get people there. People talked about it the whole weekend. Yes, darts. Yes, dartboard, the audible talking dartboard.
You heard that, talking darts.
Yes, not talking darts, talking dartboard.
We at Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America, we have the old cliche or the old adage that field of dreams, you build it, they will come. And so we focus a lot of attention on our agenda and getting topics of current interest and keeping the information out there through our VendorScope magazine, quarterly magazine, and email blast. We purchased an email blast system here recently, and that really helps a lot. But in getting our board of directors, they're scattered around the country, getting them to contact their friends and colleagues in their state as well as others, other states surrounding. location of the conference. We have our primary Sagebrush conference, which invariably ends up in Las Vegas every year. So that, in, which is good, you know, as you know, ACB, when we hold it in Las Vegas Arena, we have the best turnout, attendance because of location. The problem arises, you have to build a little better Field of Dreams. Yeah. You got a lot of competition there, and we've been quite successful the last few years in that keeping the agenda very broad, very entering, but there's been a lot going on in the business world in the last 6 years since the economy crashed. Everybody's trying to rebuild. And the key is, we're a business-oriented organization, so we always maintain a few. We put on a very broad-based agenda right away. That'll be coming out in a month or two for next February. But always leave a few slots or leave some abroad because there's always going to be a topic, whether it be through congressional or through the business side of things, that we have to slide in at the last minute. There's oftentimes a week before when we arrive in Las Vegas, something pops up and we got to make room on the agenda for it. And so we always, but again, the agenda is our primary thing. We get it out there with interesting topics. And thank God we got Artis Basin as our communications chair. And we got a lot of excellent writers in our organization that can, put together an agenda with the right verbiage that attracts people and with the particular topics. And I think that's it. Just to sum it up, the Field of Dreams philosophy: you build it, they will come.
Okay. The next question is, how do you reach visually impaired persons who are not members and haven't been previously to your conventions?
We are fortunate in RSVA that we have had a national office for a number of years. We got various funding sources. And so we have a quite extensive database. And we keep that database as current as possible, and we don't really delete people off of it. If they've been a member at one point, they kind of, so they'll get at least one mailing per year, regardless if they paid their dues or not. We are a dues-paying organization. So they'll get a reminder, and we'll do an email blast or even a hard copy mailing to any contact we have that we've made out throughout the last probably 30, 40 years that we've maintained that data. And as people, pass on, well, then that is definitely deleted. But sometimes they're family members. We have their contact information. So any person or organization we meet will enter that into our database. And they'll get an email, a hard copy mailing, or a copy of our, get at least one copy of our Vendoscope. We have one copy. We have, of course, the quarterly magazine, but one copy goes to anybody and everybody. The other three copies go to the dues-paying members.
In Pennsylvania, we have several ways, but two of the main things we've used lately is we established a membership fund for first-timers coming to our convention, where every year we try to bring in at least six new people to the convention, first-timers to the convention. Last year in my local chapter, we started a policy where any new person, any college student going to college, any student going to college, their dues would be paid for the state and ACB for the first year. Also, any person between the age of 18 and 26, their dues would be paid for the first year. Now is trying to keep them in afterwards, maintaining them. But because of that, this year, my local chapter, we brought three people who came in as scholarship winners. So I was excited about that, just to see new people joining and then applying and getting a scholarship. Now, next year, we have to see if we can keep them in as a chapter member.
I'm going to speak to two different affiliates. I'm first vice president of Bay State Council of the Blind, the Massachusetts affiliate. And one thing that we've done in the past 3 or 4 years to try to encourage new members is whoever's coming to the state convention for the first time, we buy them breakfast on Saturday morning before the general session. And that's proven to be, when the word gets out, that you get a free breakfast if you come. Food and the word free. People love those two together. There's just no way around it. They love those words together. And that has proven to be pretty valuable. We also established a student chapter and allow our two special interest affiliates, that is guide dog users. And by the way, the Massachusetts Guide Dog Users group is the single largest chapter within GDUI. And we're not by any means the biggest state. But we allow time in our Friday program for those two groups to get together and do a mini meeting of their own during our state convention. And those people who come for that stick around for something a little more than they bargained for. That helps. From a Lua perspective, one of the things we're doing is to get announcements about Lua's existence into the newsletters. Now, what is the single largest effective list of names and addresses of blind people in this country? Nope. The library system. It's big and it's accurate. Got to be accurate, right? Because they're mailing things. And if they come back, you know, this person no longer lives there or this person has moved on and beyond, they get the best data. So I want to get my existence into their newsletter. So sponsoring book-related activities that libraries can publish, hey, we're Library Users of America. Our very existence is newsworthy in their newsletters. So that's the big outreach for this year. Next question.
Okay. Have you used TV or radio to share your events?
No. How's that for my comment? No, we have a real problem in the blindness community. You try to use conventional media, and how many people are going to be the people you're trying to reach out for? If you had to pay for that, you couldn't justify it. The number of hits, so to speak, would be pretty low. It's great when you happen to get the media to do a story about something that matters to you, and then you get a little bit of free media, but it's got to be newsworthy as opposed to, quote, using radio or TV.
Well, I was just going to ask about...
Well, we do advertise our convention on ACB radio, but local we don't advertise. Only way we do that is try to do it by word of mouth.
Likewise, we are fortunate that Brian and come to
right.
In broadcast live, and then put an announcement out a month or two prior to that. But it's just cost prohibitive to try to reach out. We do reach out to the local radio station, but odds are that they have to have real slow news day in order to carry us, even mention us. And we've asked the hotel, the convention center, they'll put up a bulletin board here or there, but it's really insecure. It's just local, and that really has no impact on what we do because we want people from every state there.
Yeah, the lady in the audience just mentioned that she belongs to a company that has the hotel put out a sign about your conference. Okay, the next question is, do you attend other events to share your upcoming conferences?
Yes.
I was asking the panel.
Thank you. That's kind of summarizes it right there. Yes, we do. We try to attend as many state conferences as we can. You know, being a national organization, we do feel it is cost efficient, even though it is costly. And we reach out to most of us on the board of directors, and a lot of our members belong to various organizations, other blindness organizations, Kiwanis, you name it. We're usually on a board of directors of probably 3 to 5 different organizations. And the SRCs in your state. And I think if you're anyone that's involved in leadership position in your, you should be just ask, really all it takes is to ask your governor for an appointment to the SRC and you serve your 2 terms and, you know, sit out a year and go back on. You know, you'll develop a lot of nice contacts there. And, you know, it's word, like Brian said, it's word of mouth. We rely more on word of mouth than probably anything else.
In Pennsylvania, we try to partner with other organizations, and one of the main organizations we partner with is the Pennsylvania Initiative for Assistive Technology. They have quarterly programs around the country, around the state, and we will get a table, and different chapters and our state affiliate will have brochures there. We'll do presentations, and several Lions clubs around the state, we have, when they have their big events, we acquire a table and do presentations at their Lions events.
In as far as Lua is concerned, probably the best way that we've dealt with other affiliates, that's you boys and girls out there, right, is to try to partner to do programming, that's shared programming. We have very successfully done so with Braille Revival League. Seems to me that reading and libraries kind of go hand in hand. And also, for that matter, with students we've paired with and with teachers, we've done joint sessions. And there's frequently crossover in terms of membership development in that regard. In the Bay State, we have a couple of interesting institutions in our state. Perkins School for the Blind, we typically rent their technology center for a fall conference, and it gets around campus that Bay State's on campus, and we'll see a few faces out of the Perkins community that will join in with us. And we've also held conferences at another place called the Carroll Center for the Blind, where I work, and again, that's where adult rehabilitation takes place. So we usually see some crossovers of students coming to the conference, because the conference being held, you know, not down the street but across the campus, that kind of thing.
Okay, I'll just take enough time for maybe 1 or 2 questions from the audience for the panel. Then just come up here if
you want to answer. Hi, this is Norma Bogie from Iowa. Where it's pertains to the particular panelist. I'd be interested to know about convention publicity as far as support groups around the state. If you've done that, or if you've had anybody that, you know, has come to a convention because you came and talked to their support group. I'm just curious about that.
I had to think about that for a minute.
Right.
In Pennsylvania, we do have different cities have different support groups. The PABs have different support groups. I run a support group at Wills Eye Hospital, and we have acquired or introduced our state conventions with those individuals, and also they would visit local chapters and become members.
I'd like to just hitchhike on that a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah. I'd like to hitchhike on that a little bit. It's away from Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America, RSVA. I'm the president of our local Kiwanis Club, and I'm on the board of directors. And we're fortunate to have in Wisconsin to have the Wisconsin Council of Blind and Visually Impaired. WCBVI at one time was an affiliate of another organization comparable to ACB, I guess, or subcomparable. You're about 20, 25 years old. We established quite a fund to operate our business, our organization. They demanded that we turn it over to out in Baltimore. We said, no, we can make better use of it in Wisconsin. So, but as a result, we ended up with probably, I think there's, what is four charter members organizations that created Wisconsin Council of Blind and Visually Impaired, and there's about seven others organizations, blindness related organizations, that are affiliated with it. So it really creates a super networking opportunity for us to reach all of us. And as you know, in the last since 9/11, veterans are the most popular thing since sliced bread. And real good personal friend of mine and a lot of other is a blinded veteran. And so we brought them in and we give them the same credentials as a charter member. So there's little things like that that really, for networking, and I don't know how, I guess maybe Wisconsin's unique that we have a consortium of organizations. There's only one organization that's not member of the Wisconsin Council of Blind Vision Impaired.
Okay, thank you very much. I just wanted to, yes? Okay, we'll do that
quickly.
This will
be quick. It's Ray Campbell again. A very simple question. Do each of your organizations have a presence on social media, i.e. Twitter and Facebook? Why or why not?
Yes, in Pennsylvania we do have a Twitter. But I'll say I'm from the old school and I still haven't done any tweeting yet. We have several chapters in Pennsylvania have started a Facebook pages to advertise their chapter.
Oh, that cord is pretty short.
Okay.
Yeah, the voice, that's what I thought. The voice carried good anyway.
I thought I was carrying pretty good there.
Yeah.
Okay, in Pennsylvania we do have Twitter. I'm from the old school, so I don't use it. I keep saying I am, but I haven't yet. And we also encourage our chapters to get involved with Facebook also. So those two tools are great for you. And that's why it's good to bring in the young people. Young people are very useful. They'll be glad to do Facebook for you. And that gives them something to do. So encourage you getting new people, young people in to handle your Facebook.
Oops, excuse me. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Young people are useful. I like that. Normally we spend so much of our time and energy trying to encourage them to come and just breathe in our presence that it's good to find out they're also useful. So, Bay State Council of Blind, yes, Facebook, yes, Twitter. Lua, not so much. However, I will say that the other valuable thing, and don't think that social media is all just a matter of Facebook and Twitter. It's also very active lists, email lists. And we have very active email lists throughout all both of these two affiliates, the special interest and the state affiliate. And it's probably the number one communication tool because people don't like to wait around long enough for that next newsletter to come out to find out something that's of interest to them out and about. So I would say we do in Bay State tweet out meetings that they're coming up. We Facebook issues of importance. And probably one in 20 members are actively involved in that. So we have to make a real case of not sending it out only in the one way,
But whatever we do, we have to do it in all ways to catch everybody's attention.
We at RSVA and the other organizations that I'm involved in, we use all tools. And I'm glad Brian brought up the email stuff. Yeah, we email blast and is critical. I myself personally, I'll check my Facebook, but I usually avoid posting on it or Twitter because, I don't sound much like a bird, so I don't tweet very well.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to cut the questions because our time is getting close to the end. And I wanted to take the opportunity to thank everyone for coming, but I also wanted to recognize the affiliates who won the Affiliate Growth Awards this year. I don't know how many of you were in the Sunday night session, Monday morning, where they did the awards. This year, we had the highest percentage of new members went to BITS this year. If you don't know the acronym, it's of the technology group. And then GDUI had the largest number of individual new members. And that's the Guide Dog Users Group. And then we gave a special award to the Delaware Council of the Blind for restarting their affiliate. They had thought about dropping out, and we urged them not to. And George was the, along with a couple of new members that moved in the state, were real busy getting them back into the swing of things. Then our final thing today, we're going to have door prizes. And a few of you came in late, and we do have a few tickets left over. So if you wave your hand really good, so you make sure Allison and Michael can see you, they'll give you a door prize ticket. So jump up and down so they can see you, or...
I don't know. She's not in our committee, so I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if she'd feel comfortable. You know, okay. You know, maybe. I know what you mean.
I turned that one off.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Unless you're going to have questions now.
No, I don't think so. We're about time we hand out the prizes. It'll be. Yes, sir. Oh, we should ask him. While they're handing out the last few tickets, are there any first-timers in this room? Are there any first-timers in this room? Great. Well, welcome. And I'd also like to urge any of you that are interested in serving on the ACB membership committee to tell Kim Charlson. We're always looking for people that are eager to help us reach out. Okay, sure. Great. Sure, sounds good. Okay, do we have all the tickets?
Okay, great.
Okay, well, there's no Braille on the tickets I got to pull from, so. Okay, yes, I'll need somebody to read them. Okay, can you read them?
Sure.
Okay. The last three digits are?
967.
967. Okay. Well, we got a keychain for you and some cheese straws, I guess they're called. Here you go. Okay, Karen Campbell won that. Okay. Okay. Yeah, here. Next time you want to listen up, it's $10.
006.
Oh, you're back in the room. Who is it? Oh, great. Super. Okay, the next one. Zero, zero, 001. Marsha Dresser? Oh, the lady that came with Marsha. Okay, she gets $10. I meant they probably came with her.
Did they shake up the basket?
Okay. Okay.
964.
Get a keychain and some more cheese. Cheez-Its. Who said they got 964? Okay.
There's a $50 iTunes gift card that Peggy said was supposed to be a door prize.
Oh, okay, sure. Got it. Okay.
959.
Oh, we got a $15 iTunes card. Who is that one? Okay, we got a little toolkit for you. Okay, the last two are books of mine and a building blocks to success. You get your choice of does your the I remember the title, isn't that pretty sad? Does the image of your church attract members, or I got does the image of your business attract customers? Unfortunately, I sold my last two organization ones, so that I had with me.
963.
Oh, okay, Dan.
Yeah, 963.
Dan.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Okay.
I've got one already.
Oh, you've got it? Okay.
Yes. So if you want to give it to somebody else.
Oh, okay, sure. He said he's already got my book, so he said to draw it again.
978.
Okay, which one would you prefer? The for growing members in your church or growing customers in your business? Okay, is that the business one? Can't tell. Okay, well, it's take one of each long. I wasn't sure. Is that the other one? Okay, and we'll draw one more since Dan already had my book.
You told me I was going to win
No problem.
999.
999. How about that for a lucky number? That's it. Thank you all for coming.